This is Nachyomi, Sefer Melachim Bet, chapter 13. Yehoahaz, son of Yehu, rules over Yisrael in Shomeron. During his reign, the Jews are heavily oppressed by Aram at the hands of Hazael and his son, Ben-Hadad. Yehoahaz prays to Hashem and is granted some measure of deliverance from Aram, but the kingdom remains in a clearly inferior and fragile state. With minimal military infrastructure intact, because it's mostly been decimated by Aram. Yehoahaz does not improve the religious condition of his people, allowing the sanctuaries of Yerovam to continue to function, and also permitting an Asherah to remain standing in the capital. Yehoahaz dies, and his son, Yehoash, assumes leadership, essentially following the same path as his father. Elisha becomes ill and is on his deathbed. He is visited by Yehoash, the king of Israel, who weeps and calls the prophet, "My father, chariot of Israel and its horsemen." Elisha tells Yehoash to take a bow and arrows and to place his hand upon the bow and open the eastern window. The prophet places his hand upon that of the king and instructs him to shoot. This, Elisha says, symbolizes the prediction that Hashem's arrow of victory will smite Aram. Elisha then directs Yehoash to take the arrows and hit the ground with them. Yehoash strikes the ground 3 times. The prophet is upset and criticizes the king for not hitting the ground 5 or 6 times. Now, he declares, Israel will only defeat Aram 3 times on the battlefield. Elisha dies and is buried. One day, a group of Jews near the location of Elisha's grave were interring their own relative when a raiding band of Moavim approaches them. Fearing a conflict, the Jews cast the body of their family member into the cave where Elisha was buried and fled. When the corpse touched the bones of Elisha, it was revived, and the formerly dead man stood up and emerged from the cave. Hazael oppresses the Jewish people harshly all the days of Yehoahaz. Nonetheless, Hashem's compassion for Israel prevents Aram from destroying them. When Hazael dies, his son Ben-Hadad reigns in his stead. Yehoash, son of Yehoahaz, takes advantage of the relative weakness of Ben-Hadad to conduct several successful military operations against Aram, recapturing many of the cities of Israel that had been taken from his father by Hazael over the course of their many battles. There's a great deal to comment upon in this chapter. Let's focus, though, on the final episode in the life of Elisha, the remarkable prophet who served Israel for a span of 60 years, the longest prophetic career in our history. King Yehoash refers to Elisha with the same appellation that Elisha himself used to describe Eliyahu when he made his mysterious departure. My father, chariot of Israel and its horsemen." Hearing Elisha declare this about his mentor, recognizing the role of Eliyahu in providing security and protection to the Jewish people is not surprising. However, hearing the king of Israel acknowledge Elisha as his teacher and as the source of merit protecting the nation is truly remarkable. Without a doubt, Elisha had earned the respect, admiration, and reverence of the political establishment of Israel, despite the prophet's implicit opposition to the values and policies of the regime. He successfully endeared himself to the same monarchy that resisted and even spurned his predecessor. Elisha conveys 2 messages to Yehoash before he passes away, and each one is communicated through a symbolic action that involves the king himself. There's much discussion about the nature of the prophetic message here, and the role that the physical dramatization is supposed to play in the situation. For example, why does Yehoash's striking of the ground 3 times necessarily mean that he'll only strike Aram 3 times? A closer examination of the interaction between the prophet and the king may help us discover the answer. Yehoash's visit and his demonstration of deference to Elisha reflect his respect for the prophet, but also reveal his insecurity. He fears that with the loss of Elisha will come the loss of divine providence in Israel. Elisha's order for the king to shoot an arrow eastward while he himself places his hands on those of the king is a symbolic message that the merit of the prophet will continue to exercise an influence and assist the king in his battles against Aram. The fact that Yehoash accepts the superiority of the prophet and embraces his guidance and will therefore understand his victories as divinely ordained and not the result of human might entitles him to succeed against his enemy, against his enemies. The first prophecy embodied by the arrow flying toward Aram, symbolizes the idea that Hashem will enable Israel to triumph over its persecutors. In the second scene, however, Elisha instructs Yehoash to act alone, striking the arrows against the ground. Without Elisha's hands involved, Yehoash is weaker, more reticent, more reserved. This is a signal that after the passing of the prophet, Yehoash will not have internalized the strength, conviction, and courage necessary to inflict any lasting damage on Aram. He'll succeed at the most in delivering his people from the oppression that has been debilitating them. Elisha is disappointed to see that Yehoash is too weak to carry the inspiration of the prophet within his soul. The physical departure of Elisha will rob the king of much of his strength as a leader. Finally, let us consider the posthumous miracle of Elisha. It's noteworthy that there's a dispute among the commentators whether the man that was revived after his body was cast into Elisha's tomb actually went on to live a productive life, or whether he again died soon after. Either way, the rabbis comment that this revival of the corpse after his own death was a fulfillment of the promise that he would have a double portion of Eliyahu's spirit. Eliyahu resurrected one person, but Elisha was responsible for two such miracles. We must wonder, though, what function this unusual deed serves. Why did Hashem revive a dead man? Simply because his body came into contact with the bones of Elisha. Some thinkers have suggested that this miracle was a sign of respect for the prophet and all that he had stood for during his lengthy career. All his life, Elisha had done his best to show compassion and support for Israel and to defend the nation against its enemies. The scene of a band of marauding Moavim interfering with the funeral of an innocent Jewish man would have certainly disturbed Elisha had he witnessed it. He would have intervened to ensure that the Jew received a proper interment in his family burial plot, rather than being an unwitting victim of the terrorism of Moab and being abandoned in a random cave. Moreover, we can imagine that the emergence of a ghost, a newly risen dead man from the grave, would have scared and intimidated the Moabim, who, witnessing this spectacle, were probably hesitant to conduct further border incursions into Israel in the future. So as a defender of Israel and thwarter of those who wished them harm, Elisha was granted one last opportunity to make a difference. We can suggest an even simpler possibility that's consistent with our comments on the interactions between Elisha and Yehoash. Namely, the miracle demonstrated the lingering effects of the prophet's influence. Even after death, his memory, his teachings, and his presence can be felt and can be a source of strength and guidance to the living. Contrary to Yehoash's impressions, Elisha's death did not have to mean the end of his role in protecting and assisting the nation of Israel. If only the community would continue to contemplate and revere his message.